I'm Phil C.
And I'm Lynn.
And together, we're Roman Oz. Real interviews.
With real people.
On location.
With a great mix of Aussie music.
As requested by the people we interview.
Follow us on Facebook.
Or check us out. AllAussieRadio.com.au.
Now syndicated too.
Backwater Country, 87.6 FM.
Tuesdays and Fridays.
At 9 PM.
All interviews are live.
And on location.
And may vary in audio quality from segment to segment.
So, Phil, what's on the show this week?
Well, Lynn, we start off with Terramungamon.
Right, and do you know where that is?
Yes, of course I do. It's the other side of Dubbo.
Right, okay.
How far is it, do you think? It's not very far at all.
No, it's not.
It's not very far. So we called up with Andrew and Julie, and they are involved with Zoo to Zoo.
Right, okay.
Now, Zoo to Zoo is, it started out as a sort of a one-off bicycle race from one zoo to the next zoo,
right,
raising money for people that are dealing with depression and,
yep,
and stuff like that. Now it's become an annual event, so extremely interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Terramungamon.
Yeah, okay. And then next up, we're talking to Barry Bremner.
Now, Barry Bremner was fascinating.
Yes.
He's written two books. One is called Work About Australia.
Mm-hmm.
And in this book he talks about all the jobs,
yep,
that people can find whilst travelling around Australia.
Mm, so interesting.
If you're travelling on a budget or if you just, you know, you want to do some work, I guess if you get bored with just travelling, he's written this book called Work About Australia.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he's going to be on our program again next week.
Right.
With his other book, and that's called Workers on the Wallaby.
Oh, interesting.
Fascinating gentleman. Absolutely fabulous. Now, straight after him, Lynn, I've organised a chat for you.
Right, okay. Whereabouts?
At Gilgandra.
Oh, okay. And that's at the museum, is that correct?
That is correct. That's at the museum. And you have a chat with Max.
Right, okay.
At the Gilgandra Museum. Now, before we start any of these discussions, though, I'd like to start the show with a song.
Right, okay. And what have you picked this time?
I've picked a song by Slim Dusty. It's a number called Ringer from the Top End.
Hmm, interesting.
It is a fabulous song. Mm-hmm. Now, apart from all these fabulous discussions and, of course, this song that I just selected for myself, we've also got a great selection of music
as requested by the people we interview.
So, Lynn, what do you think?
On with the show.
I'm a ringer from the top end, where you gotta know your job and what you're doing each day. On 2 million acres, you bet you'll have to earn your pay. If you want to take it on, there's one thing that shouldn't be forgotten. Nobody else can do the job like a ringer from the top end. Out on the fence, like swallowing dust, blood on my hands from the bar. Hoping that road bull won't see the hole before they get him in the yard. But I get a funny feeling in the middle of my back. Sure enough, he's coming like a train down the track. That's when nobody else moves faster than the ringer from the top end.
Look out now!
You gotta muster 3,000 head in a day, moving to the yards and water them at end of day. It's not the sort of job you'd take if you're looking for a soft one, but you take a kind of pride in saying I'm a ringer from the top end. Well, I roll out my swag neath a boab tree, and then I'm out like a light, dreaming about those girls in town. Next thing, it's broad daylight. No time to dream of what might have been. I'm in a dirty bull catcher with a muster and team. I'd better keep my mind on the job, cause I'm a ringer from the top end.
Hey!
And nobody does the job better than a ringer from the top end.
Hello, listeners. Phil C here with my lovely other half, Lynn. And we are at the Tarangamine Reserve in Tarangamine. Is that correct? Is that where we are?
We are, Phil, just outside Dubbo. It's a beautiful part of the world.
All right. And I'm with Andrew and Julie from Zoo to Zoo. Now, tell us all about Zoo to Zoo, guys.
Well, the Zoo to Zoo started in 2006 as a bike ride from Taronga Zoo in Sydney to Taronga Western Plains Zoo in Dubbo.
Okay.
And it was going to be a one-off event, you know, get the t-shirt, tick the box, move on.
Right.
But we decided to do it again in 2007, and it has grown to be what it is today, which is a series of rides that go between zoos.
Right.
Which is between Sydney and Dubbo, Canberra and Mogo down the south coast.
Okay.
Melbourne, Dubbo, and even London, Paris. So a good way to spend a few days on the bike.
Okay, so what's the idea of Zoo to Zoo? It's other than just great exercise and seeing lovely places. Julie, would you like to answer that, do you think? Or should we leave it with Andrew Andrew at this point?
Oh, I think Andrew would be the authority on what the point of Zoo to Zoo is.
All right, so obviously then, it's apart from the exercise, seeing wonderful places, what is Zoo to Zoo all about?
So the Zoo to Zoo started, as I said, in 2006. We've supported a number of charities over the years. We supported the Kids Cancer Institute in 2006, which is a great charity that raises awareness and also funds to look for cures for childhood cancers. And then we raised money for the Dubbo Maternity Ward. And in 2008, the Dubbo Taronga Plains Zoo, their Tasmanian Devil Appeal. And then in 2009... we started supporting the Black Dog Institute.
Okay.
And we've supported them ever since. And all the charities they've supported are fantastic. And the Black Dog is like that. They just help so many people who suffer from mental illness.
Mental illness.
Which is...
depression, anxiety.
Yes, schizophrenia, things like that. That just unfortunately affects so many people in the wider community. And it's also breaking down the stigma. So if someone goes to work and they've got a broken arm, they'll get a lot of sympathy from their colleagues, or they've got a broken leg. But unfortunately, traditionally, if someone does have issues with depression or mental illness, it's almost seen as there's a stigma attached.
Yes.
And so it's breaking down that to say that there is help available, and because it affects one in five people, that means that basically everybody is affected by it, whether it's a work colleague, a family friend, and there is so much help out there that people just have to basically not only ask for it, but also look out for your mates.
Yes.
Because you can just see how people's mood changes, and they might be a bit withdrawn. They might be a bit more, you know, outward sort of, it's like, oh, hang on.
Extrovert.
Yeah, when they're supposed to be a bit more introvert, you know, hang on, what's going on there? So it's really looking out for people. And back in 2009, when we started supporting the Black Dog Institute, they had a campaign, Exercise Your Mood. And it was just really saying that if you do go for a bike ride or a paddle or a walk, you release endorphins and you just basically feel better.
Feel better, yes.
Yeah, so that's what the Zoo to Zoo support now is the Black Dog Institute.
Okay, and apart from that, though, which is a great cause, of course, the things that you do, it's not only riding your bike, you also mentioned you do the paddling.
Yes. Yeah, so we have a great group here in Dubbo called Wom Dom Nom. We maintain that if Dubbo ever gets renamed, they wouldn't call it Dubbo, they would call it Dubbo or Macquarie, a bit like Strathfont upon Avon, Henley on Thames.
Yes.
But they would refer to it as Dom, D-O-M, rather than Dubbo Macquarie. They do the same with Wellington and also with Narromine. And because those three towns and cities in Western New South Wales are so reliant on the Macquarie River, we do a paddle over 4 days in November.
Yes.
Down the Macquarie, starting in Wellington, Wom, going through Dubbo, Dom, ending in Narromine, Nom. So it's the Wom Dom Nom.
Wom Dom Nom.
And the website, womdomnom.com.
So, okay.
And again, we support the Black Dog Institute because it's another sporting event, and it, you know, there's so much work to be done in that field.
In that field, and I guess it's at one stage, because we mentioned before, it was considered to be like the sickness or the disease of the new millennium. But depression, anxiety, I mean, Even the name, Black Dog, that was Winston Churchill's term for how he described his own depression. So depression is something that's been around for a long time, and I guess a lot of people not really understanding what was wrong with them initially, and or even being too proud to admit that they were depressed or feeling anxious. So it was just, oh, I'm just having a bad day. Yeah. But it's okay to have a bad day, but of course, when bad days turn into bad weeks and bad months, that's when things can really get nasty, isn't it?
That's right. And Julie and I have done some community training so we can go to Rotary clubs and CWA groups and do a presentation on behalf of the Black Dog. Not to say that we're professionals in that field, but just to sort of... But there is a difference between having a bad day because your football team lost on Friday night.
Yes.
Then when it becomes prolonged and you've got day after day, and there is so much help available, and this releasing endorphins, it's make sure that if you do have a bad day at work, go for a bike ride, go for a walk, do whatever, and then so that at least the next day you can start afresh and not compound the issue. So, yes, but as you said, Winston Churchill and a lot of people in history do write about it, and... Yeah, and luckily now it's in the media quite a bit, and there is a lot of help available.
I guess the thing too to consider is if you are suffering with this with one of these conditions, rather than obviously going for a ride, going for a walk, that's all positive. But I guess the most important thing would be to seek some sort of medical help, wouldn't it?
Yep.
Talk to your family doctor, to the GP.
Absolutely.
And, okay, he can put you on something which will help and maybe bring you to a level place.
Yep.
But then doing the other things on top of that is probably, in my opinion, more positive than actually just taking a pill every day.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, and a lot of people probably rely on a pill because when you're in that sort of space or in that sort of place, you know, it sounds great, let's go for a walk. But some people don't even feel like getting out of bed, let alone go for a walk.
That can actually be the struggle, can't it? It's like you've got to be motivated enough to get up, get changed, get out the door and put one foot in front of the other. And if that's the blocker... that you just don't have that motivational desire or don't have someone to go with you, even, you know, getting somebody to get out the door when they really don't want to can be a major challenge. So, yes, that's part of the work that the Black Dog does is doing research into these disorders so that other organisations like Beyond Blue can better support people in their, you know... in their time of need. So when you do reach out, you're getting a range of strategies, not just one, just the go to your GP, take the pill. But you know, they've got a lot of really good online diagnostic tools and support strategies, so that if you're somebody who doesn't want to take the pill, but you need some help to get over or to get motivated to do the other things, then there's a whole range of online tools that you can access.
Okay. And so you've been associated with this group for a long time, and obviously you're going to continue doing it because it's such a great cause. How much money do you think you guys would have raised on these various things you've done, the rides and so on and so forth?
I think it's close to $2 million so far.
$2
million. Yeah, so it's, yes, and that's because we do get a lot of support from obviously the riders, the paddlers, and their businesses as well.
Yes.
So, and so and a lot of
and
our
friends
riders,
friends and family.
Yeah.
Friends and family.
Very generous. Yep.
Absolutely. So it's and that and a lot of that sort of money, especially that the Black Dog puts into these community presentations. So people, if they need to sort of send someone out to Galagambone to do a talk, and it might cost $15,000 in terms of accommodation, flights and all that sort of thing, well, there's that money available to be able to do that, as opposed to the people of Galagambone having to come up with that money to then get that presenter out there. So, and as Julia said, that the amount of research that is going into mental illness these days and breaking down the stigma is just is crucial. And it's and you know there's that, that fantastic day in September, Are You Okay Day, because it's important to look out for your mates, because it's pretty hard for someone to go to the GP, but it's maybe encouraging someone else to go. So make sure that, you know, you go with your friend and all that sort of stuff.
Well, mate, this has been a wonderful talk. I'd love to keep going with it, but I'm sort of running out of time. My presenter over there, my producer's giving me the wind-up. So what we're going to do is I'm going to play you an Aussie song before we finish, but Andrew and Julie from Zoo to Zoo, is there any websites? You mentioned the one I could hardly pronounce. What was that one? The
Womdomnom.com.
Womdomnom.
Womdomnom. Wellington on Macquarie, Dubbo on Macquarie, Narromine on Macquarie.com.
.com.
And also Zoo to Zoo with numerical two. So zoo, numerical two, zoo.com.
Okay. So, fantastic. And then, of course, there's the Black Dog itself.
Absolutely. Black Dog. .org, I think, .au, I think it's their website. But, okay. Yeah, if you Google Black Dog Institute, it'll be up the top of the Google search. So, yes, and they're a great organisation, and anybody who wants to get in contact, please do so.
Great causes. Fantastic. And that's what you need to do, listeners. Check those web addresses out, okay? Andrew and Julie from Zoo to Zoo, thank you so much for taking the time. The most amazing people we're meeting on the road here at Tarungamine Reserve. Did I say it right?
Terramunga mine. Very, very close.
I've got to admit, I'm pretty ordinary when it comes to some of these local town names. So thank you so much for your time. What can I play for you? What's your favourite Aussie song?
Oh, we've got a great band, Australian band, that's originally from Dubbo, Thirsty Merc. So if you could play 20 Good Reasons, Phil, that would be fantastic.
It's a pleasure. Thank you so much for taking some time, Andrew and Julie from Zoo to Zoo. Stick around, listeners. After Thirsty Merc's 20 Good Reasons, we'll be back with more Roman Oz.
I wrote that book. I climbed that wall. I had one look, but you just came around to say hello. The streets were filled with guilty hearts. And here was I right from the start, and I lost everything when I lost you. So tell me why. No sky, there was no rain for. All there was you and your sweet face. But life is life, and things will change like scenes upon an actor's stage. Tomorrow comes today.
Well, hello, listeners. Phil C here, and this is Roaming Oz, and we've got a very special guest on the phones today, an author of two incredible books. I think they're a must-have book if you're a traveller around Australia. His name is Barry Bremner. How are you today, Barry?
Very good, thank you, Phil. Excellent, actually.
Fantastic. Welcome to the program, my friend.
Thanks very much, and thanks very much for having me.
Oh, look, having seen these two books, my friend, I think it's extremely important that my listeners find out all about these two incredible books you've written. One is called Work About Australia, and the other one, Workers on the Wallaby. Now, before we get into the books, Barry, tell us a little bit about yourself and how these books actually came to fruition.
Oh, Phil, look, I was working for the government with the Department of Employment.
Mm-hmm.
And I spent 30 years with them, and I started off in Shepparton in Victoria.
Right.
And, you know, that's a great seasonal location there. They recruited thousands of workers, came in, and in the winter did the pruning, in the summer did the picking.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we had the canneries and that sort of thing going full bore.
Yes.
And anyway, from Shepparton, I was the 2IC there, and I went then to Hamilton in Victoria as the manager of the CES office.
Right.
And, you know, whilst we had some seasonal work there, we also had the wharf area of Portland, which was under my control. And, you know, I watched the shipments come and go there from the agricultural industries and that sort of thing. And then I came to Dubbo in 1972. And when I look back, those years in Dubbo were very important because, you know, we had cotton growing at Bourke and Warren. We had fruit growing at Bourke and the Nindi and Narromine. The tourism industry was big. We had a great abattoirs here in Dubbo. And the employment needs were, you know, they were everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And in 1993, I was at a conference in Canberra, and I was called into the into an office to meet with the director of the department, and told that at the time I was the area director for Western New South Wales, so I controlled all the employment offices between Broken Hill and Lithgow,
right,
and between Moree and Albury.
Uh-huh.
And they advised me that they were going to amalgamate my area with Newcastle and have it make it one big area office.
Okay.
And I knew it wouldn't work, and it didn't. They changed it a couple of years later, but they wanted me to move to Canberra or Sydney, and I did have a wife and five children.
Mm-hmm.
And here in Dubbo, they were all in pony club and school and that sort of thing. So I decided to leave the department and set up Work About Australia because I believed that, you know, there was just so much opportunity in my experience in the places I'd been.
Right.
That I'd start looking across the whole country. And that sort of started, I established Work About Australia and worked for a couple of years on the first book, and it was published in 1996.
Right.
With 78 locations around Australia.
Okay.
And in 2011, the last Work About Australia was published because mm-hmm. everything went on the internet.
Yes.
And I had over 200 locations.
Wow. And this is incredible. And you actually travelled yourself personally to all of these locations to put this book together and to verify all the information to be true and correct.
Correct, yeah. Yeah. My wife and I, Colleen, we both established Work About Australia, as I say, 78 locations. They were probably the most popular tourist seasonal ones that I knew at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as Work About Australia became known, I had both people who purchased the book would contact me and say, look, we've been to X place.
Yes.
And they need workers. And I also, employers from around the country started contacting me and saying, you know, we've heard about your book, we should be in it.
Okay.
So Colin and I would pack up the caravan and head off around Australia for a few weeks and go to that location, do the research, make the contact there so I could have names and phone numbers of people that people who purchased the book could actually, you know, ring up and tee up a job.
Okay, fantastic.
And so that's how I got to 200 locations and information on about 500 500,000 jobs that occur across the country.
500,000 jobs. Look, that is an incredible number, isn't it? Like, I speak to people all the time that are travelling, and some people full-time live on the road, and some of these people that are living on the road full-time, and they've got a bit of a, I guess you'd call it an itinerary. They sort of chase the jobs, and they know what they can get here and there, and it's like, I'm going to be 3 months doing this, and then I'm moving up there, and I'm going to do that. And then, so they really are, what a way to see Australia is what's actually written on the front of your book, and what a way to write the book. You actually travelled around to all of these places.
Well, what happened, you know, I believe that there was a new world out there for people who want to take advantage of it.
And yes.
The other interesting thing, Phil, was that, you know, we've got some just unbelievable tourist, you know, locations where, you know, many people, unless they travel like that, would not see.
Okay.
And I look back on our lucky time when we were travelling.
Mm-hmm.
You know, places like the Horizontal Waterfalls, the Bungle Bungle.
Yes.
You know, the Great Ocean Road in Victoria. Every state has these sorts of interesting places for people to go.
Right.
And not far away would be work available if they wanted it.
That's incredible. Because you think most people that aren't aware that the work is out there. I mean, some people don't want to work. They're fully retired. They're fully cashed up and they're happy to just travel. But then I'm meeting younger and younger people all the time, young families. And I think, how do you do this? And a lot of people are actually wanting to do it, but don't know how to about finding work and funding their trip or their lifestyle, if you want, that they've now chosen to raise their family, homeschool, bring the kids up on the road. But that's like, wow, but how do I do this? How can I make this happen? So a book like Walk About Australia, A Work About Australia, would be definitely something that these people should get onto, shouldn't it?
Yeah, well, I must admit, you know, there is a Work About Australia club, which I established back in 1993.
Okay.
That is still current.
Okay.
If people wanted to have a look at Work About Australia, they put out, the same as I do, they put out a bulletin every Friday on jobs that are across Australia.
Wow, that's
jobs
incredible.
Jobs in caravan parks, in industry, you know, drivers. There's just a gambit of them all the time. And I get the bulletin every Friday and have a look at it with interest because I actually founded it, you know.
That's amazing.
And there's just so much opportunity out there, but that's workaboutaustralia.com.au.
Right.
And, you know, with relation to some of these locations, like, you know, it's surprising. Even a state like Tasmania would have over a dozen locations.
Yes.
And the interesting thing is, with Tassie, in the early parts, you know, I didn't know a lot about Tasmania, but they heard about my book.
Mm-hmm.
And I think back in those days, the Tasmanian government contacted me and they took me across to Tasmania with my wife, and we explored Tassie. We went to different locations. We found out about their work. And they've got about a dozen locations there. And, you know, The other interesting thing is, Phil, that the work is not only at one time of the year.
Right.
It's, you know, in many, like in the fruit industry, for instance, there's, and the grapes, you know, there's pruning in the winter. You know, then there's harvesting in the summer.
Right.
And so there's just so much opportunity out there.
Mm-hmm.
And the other interesting thing is that, you know, I've looked over the years at, you know, the problems some of these areas have with floods and droughts and bushfires and, you know, different climatic conditions,
mm-hmm.
such as a hailstorm.
Right.
I've seen where, you know, a hailstorm's occurred just before harvest and, you know, you've got hundreds and hundreds of people there waiting to harvest the cherries and a hailstorm's gone through and wiped out the crop. I can remember it well.
Mm-hmm.
And the interesting thing is about all that, these areas bounce back.
Yes.
You know, they've got great resilience. They're used to people coming in and working, and
mm-hmm.
and they bounce back. They've got a big heart, these people.
Yep, that's true. And this book of yours, Work About Australia, it covers every state of Australia. You've mentioned Tasmania. It covers every single state within Australia?
Yes, it does. Queensland, for instance,
yes,
has got 50 locations
okay.
from one end to the other.
Mm-hmm.
you know, the sugar industry, the fruit and veggie industry, the cotton industry, yes. the tourism industry.
Yes. Yeah.
And I'm reading and hearing on the news the problems associated with some of our agricultural industries where they can't get labour.
Yes.
And, you know, it's just interesting that they've got to look to locals. And you mentioned earlier on in our discussion still about, you know, people who have retired.
Yes.
And I know in my travels, a lot of people said, you know, I'm too old.
Yep.
And certainly that is not the answer.
No.
You know, there are so many opportunities for older people who have retired and perhaps bought their caravan and would like to work and travel and see some of Australia or all of Australia.
Okay.
You know, there is that opportunity for them.
Okay. So what would you say is in this book for, say, an older person? Because you do get a lot of the retired nomads and they want to travel, but then they find once they're on the road that they get a little bit bored with it and they think, geez, you know, they want to get to do some work to still feel as if they're contributing and not having to eat too much into their funds either. So for an older retired couple, what would you suggest?
Well, I think there's a number of things.
Okay.
One is to perhaps get some skills before you go.
Okay.
And use the skills that you've acquired over the years. Like, let's say if you're a forklift driver, it's not a heavy job, but, you know, if you had a forklift license, for instance.
Yes.
If you were good at meeting people and you wanted to do some barista work, serving in a coffee shop.
Mm-hmm.
The other one that there's a lot of opportunities for, and I see them advertised every week, is working in caravan parks.
Okay.
You know, cleaning.
Yes.
Working in the office. A couple, you know, if you went in a lot of these jobs, they employ both of you, you know, the man and his wife.
Yes.
And the man does the toilets and in the busy time and the lady does the office.
Okay.
That sort of thing.
Okay.
And, you know, responsible service of alcohol.
Okay.
You know, if you've had experience in a hotel or a club or something like that, serving beer, those sorts of opportunities are out there as well.
Okay.
I mean, I believe that it's possible to travel Australia and work for many years and not go to the same place twice.
Wow. Okay. Well, you said 500,000 jobs, you said.
Yeah.
At the start.
When I tallied up, I finished up with Work About Australia in 2011, I retired.
Yes.
And, I counted the jobs that occurred in my view in my book.
Okay.
And it was about 500,000 jobs.
Wow.
And one thing I might mention, Phil, is that people need to make sure they have the right attitude.
Okay. Okay.
Attitude is very important. When you go into an area, have a go.
Yep.
You know, test your skills.
Okay.
Don't be afraid to put your hand up. You know what I mean?
I do. I do know what you mean. Yeah.
That's what employers out there like.
Okay.
That's what they want. They want people that are going to have a go, come in and join them, see that business boom, and do their best. And that's all people want, is they want people to do their best.
Fantastic. Well, I've got to tell you, I think, Barry, you've definitely done your best with this first book, Workabout. I keep saying Walkabout.
Walkabout.
Yeah, yes, it is. It is a long way to Walkabout. And what a way to see Australia. Work your way around this country. An incredible book. And we're going to – is there anything else you think that we may have missed you want to just – in relation to this book, or do you think we've covered it? Because it's written for every state.
As a matter of fact, it's the book really – the last book I wrote – was in 2011.
Yes.
I don't know whether you'd be able to buy a copy now anywhere, Phil, because the people that purchased the business from me, Warren and Justine Williams, they're on the internet. You can contact them.
Okay.
If people want to join Workabout Australia and get an email every Friday with, you know, jobs galore, that's the way to go.
Definitely.
And, you know, it's not expensive, so feel free to contact Workabout Australia if they want to.
So that's workaboutaustralia.com.au?
Correct, yeah.
Okay,
that's their
right,
website.
Yes. Yep.
And, it'll tell them about it. If people, look, I get people still contact me, Phil, with relation to talk about work. I mean, Colin and I did the Brisbane, Sydney, Melbourne and Adelaide caravan and tourist shows every year.
Right.
We ran seminars for people who wanted to travel around Australia and work and give out information. I'm certainly happy for anybody who wanted to contact me personally for help or advice or information. I'm only too willing to talk to them.
So what would be the best way to contact you? Just via your email, Barry?
Well, I think the email's probably the easiest because I'm tied up with Rotary and other community affairs, and you know the mobile's probably you know I'm on it a fair bit.
Yes.
But certainly my email address. Can I give it out?
Of course
now,
you can. Yes, do it right now, Barry.
All right. Well, yeah. Well, my email address is Barry B-A-R-R-Y dot Brebner B-R-E-B-N-E-R 43@gmail.com.
Okay.
If they go onto Facebook and try Barry Brebner from Dubbo, they'll find me, and I'd love to hear from anybody.
Okay. Absolutely fantastic. Barry, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us today. We are going to talk to you again next week. We want to talk about your workers on the Wallaby. So before we wind this section up, all about Work About Australia, can I play your favourite song just to end this segment? Have you got a favourite Australian singer or band that you like?
I do, mate. I had a lot to do with Slim Dusty in the old days when he was alive.
Okay.
And I was on a committee with Phil, and I've got an autographed photo sitting here in my room.
Okay.
I'd love you to play Pub With No Beer for me.
All right. We'll do that for you right now, Barry. Thank you so much for your time. And we're going to catch up with you next week to talk all about your other book, Workers on the Wallaby. Thank you so much, Barry.
Thanks, Bill. Thanks very much.
Thank you so much. Now, stick around, listeners. We're going to be back with more Roman Oz straight after Slim Dusty's Pub With No Beer.
Oh, it's a lonesome away from your kindred and all, by the campfire at night, we'll hear the wild dingoes call. But there's a nothing so lonesome, morbid or drear, than to stand in the bar of a pub with no beer. Now the publican's anxious for the quota to come, and there's a faraway look on the face of the bum. The mate's gone all cranky and the cook's acting queer. Oh, what a terrible place is a pub with no beer. Then the stockman rides up with his dry, dusty throat. He breasts up to the bar and pulls a wad from his coat. But the smile on his face quickly turns to a sneer as the barman says sadly, the pub's got no beer. Then the swaggy comes in, smothered in dust and flies. He throws down his roll and rubs the sweat from his eyes. But when he is told, he says, what's this I hear? I've trudged 50 blamin' miles to a pub with no beer. Now there's a dog on the veranda, for his master he waits. But the boss is inside, drinking wine with his mates. He hurries for cover, and he cringes in fear. It's no place for a dog, round a pub with no beer. And old Billy the blacksmith, the first time in his life, why he's gone home cold sober to his darling wife. He walks in the kitchen, she says, you're early, Bill dear. But then he breaks down and tells her, the pub's got no beer. Oh, it's hard to believe that there's customers still, but the money's still tinkling in the old ancient till. The wine dots are happy, and I know they're sincere when they say they don't care if the pub's got no beer. So it's a lonesome away from your kindred and all, by the campfire at night, we'll hear the wild dingoes call. But there's a nothing so lonesome, morbid or drear, than to stand in the bar of that pub with a no beer.
Hello, listeners. Phil C here with Lynn, and we're at Gilgandra, and we are at the
Gilgandra
Museum. All right.
Okay, and I'm with Max. How are you today, Max?
I'm not too bad, thank you.
Thank you so much for taking the time. So can you tell us a little bit about the Gilgandra Museum?
The Gilgandra Museum originally started quite a long time ago, but then it came into this building here, or that building there, in 1996, and it was opened, and it's been extended three times to fit things in.
Yes.
And there's many more things that could come in that relate to the Gilgandra area that aren't in there. Probably with a little bit of reorganisation we can add more to it, but it's certainly a very interesting museum. The cross section, we've got very rare tractors in there. We've got a printing press from down the street here, the old lead, I forget what you call it, but anyway, everything was made with lead before they printed.
Right.
There's an old telephone exchange with the cords on it, where when you rang in you put the cord in.
Yes.
There's many telephones. It's great to get children in here because they, how do you operate that phone?
Exactly. And how do I get YouTube on that?
Exactly. It's a wonderful education. Then to see the buggies and the horses, there's actually solid horses being bought to put in front of the buggies. There's another one in a sloping thing that the horse walks all the time, and that drives the cleaning machine to clean wheat.
Oh, okay.
Grains. This, look, it just goes on and on what you can see here.
A lot of things that, you know, children now would not know about, like, as you said, the telephones. And I did hear that there was an old cooktop in there, a wood-fired stove and everything else. So
there is.
Yes.
The old chip heaters for heating the water before to put in the bathtub.
Yeah. No, that, yes.
You know, they're here and they're set up in the room just down the side there. And it's set up as a little hospital there. There's actually an old birthing bed in there from the days, and a lot of the tools and equipment that the doctors used in the earlier days. Then you go around a little bit further and there's a school that's been brought in from out near Turrawina, built many years ago. It's got the old long desks in there, and the
inkwells
is where you put the pens on the front of it.
I remember those desks from that's going back a little bit.
My very word of it. When you go on a
No, you're right. Keep going, Max.
Go on a little bit further, and you know, we had a dairy here owned by the Hargraves brothers, and a lot of their equipment is there. You know, supplied Gilgandra with all the milk and so forth. And then there's many old machines, and then you come around into the main museum that we've been talking about.
Right. And I noticed out the front you've got windmills as well that are powering
the kangaroo and Ned Kelly.
Yes, that's very clever.
Very clever. Who thought of that, Max?
It's a chap that lived out at Turrawina, and in fact he even built the observatory that's down here. Very clever farmer. And he and my dad did a lot of work here together. They just suited each other, and they certainly did a lot of work here. But that Howard Rotary Hoe out there, my great uncle was the man that first built the first one.
Oh, right.
Yeah, Cliff Howard.
Oh, okay.
My mother was a Howard, and her father's brother was Cliff Howard.
So you've been in this area for quite a while then, obviously.
The longest I've been away from Gilgandra is 6 weeks.
Really?
So you were born in Gilgandra, mate?
Yes.
And lived here all your life with the exception of 6 weeks. Yeah.
Oh, okay. And also, too, I noticed that you've got a couple of posters with regards to the Cooee March, which Gilgandra's famous for.
Exactly.
Back in 1915, I think it was, where 35 soldiers
finished
started.
Up in Sydney. 26 left here.
Yeah,
but
26.
Then they kept joining them as they went down.
Some
of them went to the ball the night before they left, and they thought, oh, we're going to join this. So they went home, got their gear, and caught up with them. Out along the road somewhere.
Oh, right.
And once again, Cliff Howard's and my grandfather's brother was finished up marching with them in Sydney.
Oh, right, okay.
Yes. That what you're pointing out there now is that they were raising money to build a hospital here in Gilgandra.
Right.
And they if you wrote on there, put your name on there, it cost you sixpence.
Oh, right. Okay.
In other words, 5 cents these days.
Yeah.
And then a lady crocheted the whole lot. Would you call it crochet?
Oh.
Anyway, she stitched the whole lot.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, embroidery.
Embroidered, that's the word.
Oh, so it's an embroidered book. I guess it's a sheet or a blanket, isn't it?
It's a sheet.
It's the size of a bed sheet.
Yes.
Wow.
And if you could only get all the names, you'd know how many sixpences they raised. But
wow.
That
was a minimum.
That's
and then
impressive.
Next to that, you can see the Lloyd Middleton thing there. He went to school in Gilgandra here for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And not long. But, you know, we've had quite a few people go to war from here.
Yes.
And, you know, away from here, there's a lot of other things that you can visit in Gilgandra.
There is, right? Okay.
What would you suggest, Max?
Yes.
Well,
for our listeners.
It's regarded as the town of windmills.
Yes.
And we're known for the windmills. And you understand a windmill is designed to bring up the sub-artesian water.
Correct, yes.
So before a town water system was here, we had... they drew either rainwater tank or bore water.
Right.
And then down along the road there, well, it's actually the windmill walk. Goes from the Cooey Heritage Centre right down to the main street along the riverbank.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
We did notice that, yes.
Yes, okay. And then we've got the Cactus World.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just thinking about down along this road. That's the biggest collection of cacti in, I think, the Southern Hemisphere.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
He exports... cactuses all over the world.
Oh, okay.
Yes. And then you go down further and the observatory, unfortunately, we're talking about the chap that worked up here, he built that.
Right.
But it's not open anymore.
No.
Hopefully someday someone will come along
and open it.
And then you've got the main street. There's lots of other things to see in Gilgandra, the sites of the old sawmill. We had three sawmills once upon a time, a flour mill, which closed down and then burnt in the later years. And let me think, out on a road, we've got what's called a corduroy road.
Right.
Do you understand a corduroy road?
No.
No,
well,
not at all.
It travels from the village Kirban west. And in the days of the Cobb & Co. coaches on the black soil plains,
right,
when it got wet, the coaches would bog.
Yes.
Uh-huh. So they cut and laid white cypress trees side by side for miles.
Oh, okay. So that the coach could go across.
So the coach wouldn't bog.
Oh, wow.
And used only in the wet time, of course, mm-hmm. because it was quite rough. But it got through.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, another experience we had, we've got the opposite, just up here where the grain receival businesses are. We had a corduroy road there because it was raw sand and the wagons loaded with goods would bog in the raw sands. We went to the opposite.
Uh-huh.
Because it was too dry.
Yes.
Yep.
You laid a corduroy road there.
Oh. So that's probably where the name for corduroy fabric came from, is it?
Could have been. Could have very easily been.
Oh, well, there you go.
I don't know the answer. We've got what's called the Berrida Woolshed.
Yes.
That you can ring up and make an appointment, go out and see the old shed. Very old.
Mm-hmm.
There are photos of it here somewhere. I just can't see one quickly.
Mm.
But Gilgandra is an old area, although we're not the first town settled on the Castlereagh River, Mandurran was.
Okay.
Oh, right.
And then even this little village I talked about, Kirban, was settled before Gilgandra.
Mm. Okay.
But then we're known for mixed farming.
Yes.
You know, grains, sheep, cattle.
Cattle, yeah.
Goats are coming in now.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Yep.
And... I don't know. There's a lot of other things you can see.
So if someone was to come to the museum, how long would they need to take?
Well, some people go through in 15 minutes. Other people go through in 3 hours. It depends how you want to study, because a lot of the things have a little
story to them.
Story to them that you can go and stand there and read.
Yeah.
Okay.
And very interesting
to
read all that, and you'll see the names of the people in the Gilgandra area, and as far as Walgett, that sort of thing, that they've donated things to the museum so that people can see them.
All right, well, that sounds very fascinating, Max. Thank you so much for taking the time to tell us all about the museum. Now, we're going to play an Aussie song for you. Who would you like us to play?
Oh, let's have the Seekers yes. and the carnival is over.
Okay, I'm sure Phil will have that.
Absolutely, Len. I can do that. The Seekers, the carnival is over. Max, thank you so much for taking the time today. It's been really great for us to be here. And I hope lots of listeners come through. When they're coming through the area, they pop in and see you.
Yes, well, we do too. It's a very interesting town. Yes. We're known as a friendly town.
Yes.
So, been a pleasure to talk to you.
Well, there are several free camps in Gilgandra, aren't there, for overnight stay?
Yes.
Or?
Yes, well, the council will actually be developing one between the museum here and the Kiwi Heritage Centre.
Okay, oh,
there'll
fantastic.
Be 10 sites there.
Very fantastic.
There, you know, no services provided.
No. Okay.
But this free camp is just across the road at the
Sporties
or the
yes.
bowling club
no,
there.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's another one up at the Railway Hotel.
Yes.
And down the main street, the Royal Hotel. There's a small area there where
yes.
people can free camp.
Mm. So you're going to be a very RV friendly town.
Well, I'd like to see that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Because you'll get more people here.
Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks.
Now stick around, listeners, for more of Roman Oz straight after the carnival is over.
There you go, folks. That was the Seekers, and what an oldie but a goodie. The carnival is over. The show's almost over, folks, but before we wind it up this afternoon, I'm going to play you a song for everybody travelling around, roaming around Oz, fantastic country of ours. Now, normally when I mention this song, straight away you think of either the Seekers or the Bushwhackers. Today, I'm going to play you a rendition by a gentleman who goes by the name of Brian Sutton. And the song, of course, is a number called We Are Australian.
Mm-hmm. I came from the dreamtime, from the dusty red soil plains. I am the ancient horse, the keeper of the flame. I stood upon the rocky shore, I watched the tall ships come. For 40,000 years I've been the first Australian. I came upon the prison ship, bowed down by iron chains. I cleared the land, endured the lash, and waited for the rains. I'm a settler, I'm a farmer's wife, on a dry and barren run. A convict, then a free man, I became Australian. Daughter of a digger who saw the mother lode. The girl became a woman on the long and dusty road. I'm a child of the depression, I saw the good times come. I'm a bushy, I'm a battler, and I am Australian. We are one, but we are many, and from all the lands on earth we come. We share a dream and sing with one voice. I am, you are, we are Australia. I'm a singer of songs, I'm Albert Namajira, and I paint the ghostly gums. I'm Clancy on his horse, I'm Ned Kelly on the run. I'm the one who waltzed Matilda, I am Australian. I'm the hot wind from the desert, I'm the black soil of the plains. I'm the mountains and the valleys, I'm the drought and flooding rains. I am the rock, I am the sky, the rivers when they run, the spirit of this great land, I am Australian. We are one, but we are on earth we come, we share a dream and sing with one voice. I am, you are, we are Australia. We are one, but we are many, and from all the lands on earth.
Hope you enjoyed the show, listeners.
If you missed any, check out our Facebook page or allaussieradio.com.au.
Tune in next week for more Roman Oz.